anything, there really is something there. And I wanted to start with stereograms today because I think it provides a neat illustration for the good news in our scripture reading. Our church is going through the Bible together, and today we're in the book of Esther. And Esther is unique from all the other books in the Bible because it's the only one that never explicitly mentions God. And at first glance, it might look like God isn't anywhere in the story, that it's just random and messy. But upon closer inspection, we begin to see evidence of God's presence, power, and provision everywhere. And the good news of Esther is that even when we aren't always able to see God, our loving, faithful God is always with us and always working to bring about his good purposes in our lives. With a little time and guidance, we begin to see evidence of God's presence, power, and provision in our own lives. My Uncle Tom didn't just help me see stereograms. He also helped me see God. He was a devout Christian man who went through a very difficult battle with ALS. And I remember that even in the darkest of moments, he was constantly pointing to how God was near and how God was active. And I'm so grateful that he taught me to look at life through eyes of faith. Esther was a young woman equally blessed with an older relative who helped her look at life through eyes of faith. And so as we go through this story together, I pray that God will give all of us vision to see where God is, how God is moving, and what God is calling us to do. I brought along some playing cards to help me tell the story. But before I get into the details, I want to first give you a timeline to help put some context around this story. So if you've been tracking with us, you might know that the nation of Israel fell to Babylon. Their capital city and their temple were destroyed. The people were forced to leave their homeland and live as exiles in Babylon. Well, in 539 BC, Babylon fell to Persia. New world power in place. And last week, we discussed how the Persian king, Cyrus, issued a decree in 538 BC, allowing the Jewish people to return home and rebuild their temple. Interestingly, not all the Jews returned home. Some of them chose to stay in exile. And Esther's predecessors were among those who chose to stay. So Esther's story takes place 478 BC in Susa, 850 miles away from Jerusalem, not where you might expect God to be. But let's get into the story. The story of Esther begins with a king and queen. Can you see? I don't know if I'm trying to. So at the time, Xerxes was the king of Persia. Xerxes threw a gigantic party. His party lasted 6 months. And he went over the top with food and beverages and decorations. Then when that party was over, he threw another party. I mean, this guy really liked to party. But after a while, the partying got a little out of hand. And the scene turned ugly. In Esther 1, verse 10, it begins, "On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine." Pause for a moment. When do you ever hear something good come after a statement like that? People can make some really poor decisions when they're under the influence. We have to be careful. And King Xerxes wasn't careful. And he ordered his servants to bring in his wife, Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown because she was lovely to look at. Some scholars think his instructions meant to literally bring her wearing only her royal crown. Now, whatever he meant, his intentions were to show off his wife, to exploit her beauty. Now, Queen Vashti was a pretty strong, confident woman. She was not about to be taken advantage of or paraded around as a trophy wife. So she refused to come. This infuriated the king. Xerxes was not somebody that you wanted to mess around with. He was a brutal, unstable human being. Have any of you seen the movie 300? Some of you have. So it's based on the Battle of Thermopylae, where 300 Spartan soldiers took on the Persian army, led by none other than King Xerxes, same guy. And Xerxes just pursued this battle without even thinking of the damage it would cause to his own soldiers. They were falling left and right, and he just kept making them go. 20,000 Persian soldiers died in that battle. And afterwards, King Xerxes threw 19,000 of their bodies into the sea so that it didn't look like his defeat was so bad. That's Xerxes. And everybody's wondering, what is Xerxes going to do to Queen Vashti? Now, on this occasion, he was a little bit tamer than I might expect, but I think it was because he actually cared about Queen Vashti. But he was upset, and he was prideful, and in his rage, Xerxes banished Queen Vashti. Then his royal advisors hosted a huge beauty contest to find the replacement queen. The loveliest ladies in the kingdom were to be gathered, given beauty treatments, and then presented to the king. The one he liked best would be chosen as his wife. Kind of sounds like the original version of The Bachelor show, doesn't it? And so here's where we meet Esther. She was one of the lovely ladies selected for the king. Esther was only about 15 years old when this happened. And although she was quite young, she had already experienced a lot of pain and difficulty in her life. Her people were living as exiles. Both of her parents had died, leaving her an orphan. She was raised by her older cousin, Mordecai, only to be taken away from her home and forced to be part of this ridiculous beauty pageant. At first glance, it might seem like God isn't anywhere in this story. It's just random and messy. Esther's name means hidden. And I imagine in that moment, she felt like God was hidden. But the good news is, even if we can't always see God, our loving, faithful God is always with us, always working to bring about his good purposes in our lives. Upon closer inspection, we can see evidence of God's presence, power, and provision. Esther did very well in the beauty contest. The king gave her the rose, and she became the new queen of Persia. Now, if we stop the story there, it's a pretty good story, rags to riches. But this is more than a good story. It's a God story. And there are two other characters in this God story. First one is Mordecai. I'm going to use an ace for Mordecai because he was a really good guy. I mean, he was just all about helping others. Mordecai was the one who took in his younger cousin Esther when she was orphaned and raised her as his own. When Esther was taken to be with the king, he camped out by the gate to keep an eye on her. One day while he was at the gate, he heard about a plot to assassinate the king. He quickly told Esther, who informed the king. The plot was thwarted, and the whole incident was recorded in the king's journal. The other character is Haman. King Xerxes promoted Haman to be his top advisor. I mean, he was a joker for Haman. Now, he wasn't the funny kind of joker. He was more like the Joker in Batman, evil. In contrast to Mordecai, Haman was all about himself. He was arrogant, prideful, greedy, spiteful. Haman was so full of himself that he wanted everyone to bow down to him. Well, Mordecai would not bow down to him, and this just infuriated Haman. It wasn't enough for Haman to just kill Mordecai. When he found out that Mordecai was Jewish, he wanted to kill all of the Jewish people in the kingdom. So Haman went to King Xerxes and asked him to sign a decree to exterminate the Jewish people in the country. He cast a lot to determine the extermination date. Xerxes went along with it. The decree was signed and sealed. Understandably, the Jewish people were shaken and devastated. They were to be exterminated in 11 months. At first glance, it might look like God isn't anywhere in this story. It just looks random and messy. And I would guess that there were some Israelites who were saying, "Where are you, God, in all of this?" But the good news is, even if we can't always see God, our loving, faithful God is always with us, always working to bring about his good purposes in our lives. And upon further review, we begin to see evidence of God's presence, power, and provision. 9 months go by. Time is running out. One day, Esther sees Mordecai by the gate and notices that he looks kind of upset. Now, Esther is oblivious to the whole decree. She had kept it secret that she was Jewish, didn't tell anybody in the royal palace. So nobody knew that her life was in jeopardy, including Esther. Well, Mordecai tells her what was going on, and he asks Esther to speak to the king. And Esther says, too risky. The royal rule states you don't go to the king unless the king summons you. If you break that rule, you can die. And it didn't go so well for the last queen who disobeyed. But Mordecai pushes back, and he challenges Esther. As we heard in chapter 4, verse 14, he said, "If you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this." I love Mordecai. He had faith that God was going to save his people with or without Esther. But he couldn't help but see that God had made Esther the way he made Esther and placed Esther where he had placed Esther for such a time as this. Esther was perfectly positioned to make a difference. Yeah, it would be risky to take action, but it would be risky not to take action. Well, Esther needed some time to seek God, so she asked her people to join her in 3 days of fasting and prayer. Not long ago, we went through the season of Lent, where people traditionally give up things so that they can focus more on God. Well, Esther gave up food for 3 days so she could focus more on God. I really admire this about Esther. She didn't just ask, "God, where are you?" She actively looked for God and looked to God. And she emerges from this 3 days with clarity, conviction, and courage. And she says, "I'm going to the king, no matter the risk." And though the deck was stacked against Esther, she had the King of Kings on her side. And when we seek God and follow God's lead, God is able to reach and transform lives. Esther goes to the king, and he graciously welcomes her in. Whew! Then he tells Esther she can ask him for anything, up to half of his kingdom. Wow! Like, this was going really good for Esther. And had I been in her shoes, I probably would have made my request right then. But Esther sensed that the timing wasn't right yet. This is important. Sometimes God says go. Sometimes God says wait. The time isn't right yet. We have to pay attention to how God leads. So for her request, Esther invited King Xerxes and Haman to join her for a banquet. Well, Xerxes liked the party. Haman liked the tension, so they both said yes. And at the party, again, King gives her the same offer. Ask for anything, up to half the kingdom. But still, she doesn't feel like the timing is right yet. So she invites him back for a second banquet. On his way home, Haman bumps into Mordecai. And, oh, it just gets him going, and he's so mad he can't even wait for the extermination date to kill Mordecai. He goes home and he erects a 75-foot pole upon which he plans to impale Mordecai. Now, it's starting to sound bad, but this is where the story starts to get really good. And we see evidence of God's presence, provision, and power at work. That night, King Xerxes cannot sleep. Coincidence. And while he's up, he decides to read through the king's journal. And he comes across the story of Mordecai helping save his life. And all of a sudden, he realizes, we never did anything to thank him. So the next day, when Haman comes back into work, the king says, hey, Haman, what do you think I should do for a man that I want to honor? Well, Haman is so full of himself, he can't imagine that there's anybody else in the kingdom that the king would want to honor than him. So he makes a big deal. And he's like, you know what? You should dress him in a royal robe, put the royal crest, put him on a horse, ride him through town shouting, this is the man the king honors. And King Xerxes is like, that sounds like a good idea. How about you go do that for Mordecai? Oh, that must have been an interesting ride. Well, Haman is still just reeling. He's fuming. He goes to Esther's second party. King, same request. Anything you want, up to half the kingdom. This time, she feels like the timing is right. And she says, King, would you spare me and my people from an evil man who's trying to kill us? King Xerxes is like, well, who is it? And she said, it's Haman. Haman is stunned and terrified. The king is furious. He's so mad he just storms out of the room. Haman stays behind to beg Esther for mercy. And then, get this, you cannot make this stuff up. Haman accidentally trips and falls on Esther while the king walks back into the room. It did not look good. And the king is outraged, and he says, what should I do to Haman? And one of the servants is like, pick me, pick me, pick me. He's like, what? Well, Haman just erected a 75-foot pole to kill Mordecai on. The king thought, how convenient. Bye-bye, Joker. And then the king gave all of Haman's riches to Esther, and he gave Haman's position to Mordecai. And they couldn't reverse the previous edict, but King Xerxes allowed them to write a new decree, which said that the Jewish people on the extermination date could gather together and defend themselves. When the date came, with God's help, a small band of Jewish people were able to defeat 75,800 of the enemies who attacked them. And ever since then, on that same date, the Jewish people have celebrated the Feast of Purim. Purim means lot, referring to how Haman had cast a lot to determine their extermination date. But they celebrate on that date to remind them that even in that dark hour, God was with them and God can save them. As cool as this story is, God had an even bigger picture in mind. God promised the people of Israel that he was going to send a savior through their nation. And God spared his people so that one day God could spare all of us through his son, Jesus. When Jesus was crucified and killed, and it looked like the situation was hopeless. It looked like God wasn't anywhere. But God was there working to bring about his good purposes. And Jesus destroyed sin and death and evil so that all of our sins could be forgiven and that God could raise us up to new life with him forever. And just like they celebrated the Feast of Purim, we now celebrate the Lord's Supper for the same reason, to remind us at all times that God is with us and that God is able to save us. I don't know about you, but I am so glad the story of Esther is included in the Bible. And as we wrap up, I want to consider with you how we can apply this story to our own story. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and I'm going to have you reflect on it, and then we'll take some time to talk about it and discuss it together. First, where do you need God to work on your character? Do we need God to remove from us any of the harmful characteristics that we saw in Xerxes or Haman. Gluttony, anger, greed, pride, prejudice, spitefulness. On the other end of the spectrum, do we need God to grow in us any of the positive characteristics that we saw in Esther and in Mordecai? Faithfulness, kindness, devotion, courage, patience. Second, how can you look at life through eyes of faith? We all go through seasons where we struggle to see God. Maybe you've had a painful past, or maybe you feel like the deck is just stacked against you. I would encourage you, don't lose heart. Don't give up. Instead, trust the good news that our loving, faithful God is always with us, always working to accomplish his good purposes in our lives. In fact, God promises this in Hebrews 13, verse 5. He says, I will never leave you or forsake you. And so like Esther, let's actively look to God and look for God in our lives through fasting and prayer. Maybe one way to practice this every day is to simply ask ourselves, ask others, where did you see God today? And then share our observations with each other. One final question. What is your for such a time as this? God has a purpose for your life. In Ephesians 2, verse 10, God says, you are my masterpiece, created in Christ Jesus for good works that I prepared in advance for you to do. It is no accident that God made you the way he made you and placed you where he placed you. God has put unique gifts, passions, and abilities inside of you. And God has uniquely positioned you to make a difference for him in this world. And maybe God might be calling you to make a difference in your nation or in your neighborhood, with your friends or with your family, at your school or at your workplace, in your church or in your community. What is your for such a time as this? To help get the wheels turning in your mind, I want to share a couple of examples from our church. I think about a man in our church who feels like God is calling him for such a time as this to share the good news about Jesus in Malaysia, where it is currently illegal to do so. And despite the risks, he stepped out in faith, and God is blessing his ministry. On the other end of the spectrum, I recently spoke to a man who feels like God is calling him for such a time as this to intentionally invest in the faith of his godson who is about to go off to college. I think about a group of teens in our church who feel like God is calling them for such a time as this to host a gathering this Monday evening to address the very real concerns of mental health, addiction, and suicide that are plaguing their peers. On the other end of the spectrum, I think about a group of seniors in our church who feel like God's calling them for such a time as this to organize a ministry where their peers can experience community, purpose, and growth. There's so many possibilities, but our world needs more than ever people of faith who will identify our for such a time as this and act on it. And I want to close by showing you one inspiring story of how God is at work in and through our church. Because when we step out in faith, when we seek God, God is able to reach and transform lives. You might remember that one of our goals in Above and Beyond was to start a marriage ministry. We kept hearing stories of how couples were struggling, how families were struggling. And we said, God is calling us for such a time as this to make a difference. And here's a glimpse at what God has been up to through the generosity and the people of our church.
Dear Good Shepherd, thank you. We were going through a difficult season in our marriage, and both of us were at a point of giving up. We believe that Good Shepherd and Married People Ministry has transformed our marriage. We benefited from both the large group and the small group events. You know, small groups were great for us. We had never been a part of a small group before, and to be honest, it was a bit out of both of our comfort zones. We quickly felt at ease and connected with our small group. It was great to connect with people that were facing the same challenges we were facing in our marriage. We couldn't help but feel God at work, given the similarities we had with the other couples in our group. Before attending Married People, we were disconnected as a couple. We were living in the same house, but living totally separate lives. Conversations were few and far between and often led to arguments. We were both taking each other for granted. Attending Married People helped us to realize that great marriages take a lot of work and effort. Each time we felt more connected as a couple. Attending worship regularly and having talk times, date nights, eating dinner together nightly, and always believing the best in each other are some of the changes that we made that have really strengthened our marriage. Now, we feel our marriage is stronger than it's ever been. We have better communication and deeper conversations. We feel more like we are one as opposed to individuals with our own agendas. Through a lot of prayer, worship, and the Married People Ministry, we have been able to restore what was once lost. Oh, and on a side note, yesterday we celebrated 16 years of marriage.
Whatever your story, our loving, faithful God is always with you. He's always working to bring about his good purposes in your life. So, where do you need God to work on your character? How can you look at life through eyes of faith? What is your for such a time as this? At the bottom of your sermon notes is a response card. If you put your name and your email, I promise I will pray for you and write to you. We can continue the conversation together. And I'm going to give you a few moments to think and pray, and then we're going to have some conversation together and actually talk about it. I want to hear what's percolating in your soul. What do you feel like God is saying to you and how God is calling you to respond? So while the band plays a little bit, I just want you to take a few moments and think through, write what's on your heart, and then we're going to have a conversation together. So the theme phrase of this service is be the 12th. It's not just about hearing, it's about saying, okay, I'm going to be part of taking action and responding. And so Craig has a microphone, and I'm just curious, what's percolating in your heart? What do you feel like God is saying to you through this wild story, and how is God calling you to respond? Mm-hmm.
Well, I love the part where Esther sensed that the timing wasn't right yet. Mm. I'm very impatient. And when I think God has an idea for me, I'm going to do it yesterday.
Right.
And I think the idea of listening for when is God saying the timing is right.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Great. Others, what is God saying to you?
I'm transitioning to a new city, state, community, church community the end of this month, and the church where I'll be going is not this. Hmm. It's very small. I feel like I've been very sheltered here, and we're just so fortunate. Small churches are a challenge, and I feel like that I was very sad for the longest time. It's very hard to leave this, and I'm praying about it and starting to feel excited, actually, about going to a small community, church community, where, you know, hopefully I can be of service,
yeah,
you know, in bigger ways.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to miss you, but thanks for sharing that. And neat for such a time as this. You can make a difference there. Great. Wonderful. Thanks for sharing. Others, what is God stirring in your heart? How is God moving you to respond? I see someone on the...
What I've gotten out of the story of Esther is just how important it is to be brave where God puts you. Even if that's among the Persians or the Babylonians, and to do the right thing, what's in your heart and what God is calling you to do. And that's a hard thing to do. Esther was extremely brave.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing. Down here.
What I've gotten out of Esther is that I should never listen to or look to people to tell me what to do, as Haman did, even Xerxes. They depended on other people's opinions to make their decisions. And I need to depend on God. And I do that by reading, by praying, by disciplining myself and listening for him, as you said, in every aspect of my life, because that's when I'll hear what it is he wants for me.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Anyone else before we transition? So never forget that you are perfectly positioned to make a difference for God and to be the 12th. And I pray for this community. I pray in my own life that God would give us the vision to see where he is, how he's moving, and what he's calling us to do. Would you sing with us, "Be Thou My Vision"?